DW Deutsche Welle. World in progress.
In this edition, how women are fighting stereotypes in African films and breaking the silence about sexual violence in Japan.
The man who raped me, after we fought, I said no, I said stop. He never stopped, and the time I decided to go to police, but of course police told me my life would be over, I won't be able to work in Japan. They also didn't want to investigate such a high-profile person, so they always discouraged me. They didn't take my report.
Welcome to World in Progress. I'm Anke Rasper in Bonn, Germany. The resignation of film producer Harvey Weinstein over sexual harassment allegations and the Me Too movement that's taken hold ever since has caused shockwaves in the film industries in the US and in Europe. At this point, however, there's been little movement in the African film industry. But that doesn't mean that nothing is being done on the continent, nor that women don't face sexual harassment. Emmanuelle Landais met female filmmakers who are trying to change things through films. Some of them were showcased at a recent film festival in Dakar.
The allegations against Harvey Weinstein are extremely grave. Now a taboo's been broken. More and more female actors are supporting those who speak out against sleazy Hollywood bosses.
In September 2017, the Hollywood film industry was rocked by sexual abuse allegations against American film mogul Harvey Weinstein. Soon, women denounced sexual abuse by male actors and industry leaders on social networks. But in Africa, the hashtag didn't take off. Overall, the Me Too movement was met with silence on the continent. For filmmaker Giovanni Adogino Zinzu from Benin, sexual abuse just isn't spoken of publicly, she says.
We know Africa. Africa, even when you suffer inside. It's rare to see women who will go and say, excuse me, I was raped. Even the simple act of declaring it to the police, even when you know who your aggressor is already a problem because there is a feeling of shame, of embarrassment. It's as if it was you that provoked your aggressor.
Giovanna was in Dakar to represent her short film on obstetric fistulas, a medical condition in which a hole develops in the birth canal as a result of childbirth that can result in incontinence. The condition is such a taboo, she entitled her film The Illness of Shame.
Les femmes en Afrique, ça n'a pas l'expression de la femme n'a pas encore pris comme il faut.
The women in Africa haven't... Women's expression hasn't taken the way it should. It still needs to take off. It's true that in the United States, it was enough for just one person to speak out. And all the others who hadn't done so then spoke up too. But I think for Africa to get there, we have some way to go.
In parts of Africa where domestic violence is rampant, strong cultural and religious taboos prevent women from admitting that they are suffering. According to a 2016 World Bank report, one in two African women say they accept domestic violence and about a third have been subjected to abuse. Yolande Welimoun, a 27-year-old filmmaker from Cameroon, says she's experienced unwanted advances from men in the industry.
C'est présent dans tous les milieux. Professionnel et artistique, ce genre de choses existe toujours parce que
it exists in all professional and artistic environments. This kind of thing always exists because it is a kind of meeting between men, women, and there will always be one on the prowl. That will tell you these are the conditions for this film. It happens. I've been approached by several directors who want to flirt with you, go out with you, and when you refuse, you won't be a part of their project. But I don't care. I do not care. I know my worth. I studied cinematography, and I know that despite the obstacles, I will make it.
And those obstacles are rife, not least assumptions that women don't belong in the film industry, says Giovanna.
There is a prejudice. People say it's a man's job and that it's the men who can stay late on a film set. It's the guys who can travel to go shoot. It's the men who can stay and edit when it's too late. And you're told that it's not a woman's job. Women must do a job that allows them to go and take care of the home.
Financing projects remains a big obstacle, says Kigali-born filmmaker Clementine Desabe-Jambo. Women in the film industry have to work twice as hard as men, she says.
Being a filmmaker is a problem. There is no resources. We are suffering the same. When I go outside Rwanda, that's where I start like facing problem as women. Like, you have to prove that you own that place. So it becomes like a double work for you. What men can do is you have to do it, but also add something more to prove. In other people to believe in you, you have to prove it like twice.
Despite the arduous conditions women must navigate through to see any of their work come to fruition, African women's film production nevertheless continues to grow and expand, offering surprising creative and critical stories, which in their own way provide a Me Too kind of movement which is uniquely African and which is slowly, slowly changing the narrative. For DW, Emmanuel Landé in Dakar.
Talking about sexual violence in public is difficult pretty much anywhere, but in Japan, it's a particularly thorny taboo. That's why Shiori Ito is so unique. Despite all resistance, she went public and accused an influential political journalist, Noriyuki Yamaguchi, of drugging and raping her, breaking the Japanese silence on rape. Yamaguchi, who had also written a biography of Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, denied the allegations. Despite evidence against him, the prosecutors declined to bring charges. So, Ito took the unusual step of going public with her allegations and wrote a book about her case. She has since faced a lot of backlash over speaking about the taboo topic in Japan. But in recent weeks, the debate about sexual harassment has been reignited. A spate of allegations has led to several public figures being shamed and a number of top officials resigning over sexual harassment claims. Women in Japan have now started a We Too movement, but they still face huge resistance. Our reporter Michaela Fieser traveled to Japan to meet the woman who started the debate in the country. Her report is presented by Kathleen Schuster.
It isn't easy to get a hold of Shiori Ito. Her story and the way she dared to go public with it has made her famous in Japan. Last summer, the 28-year-old journalist published the book Black Box. She wrote about the day she was raped in 2015 in a Tokyo hotel room, and how the Japanese justice system let the rapist walk free. Finally, we get in touch via Facebook. Ito finally contacts me. She agrees to a meeting at the office of her publisher, Bungei Shunju. It's one of the most prestigious publishing houses in Japan. As is customary in Japan, Ito says thank you for a few small gifts, and then immediately opens the bar of chocolate. She needs the energy, she says.
And it's been hectic morning, so I feel like I need sugar.
Yeah. Ito is a delicate and slender person, but despite her unintrusive demeanor, this is the woman who has taken on Japan's male-dominated hierarchy. She's wearing a little bit of makeup and a very light perfume, something that's rare for Japanese women. She's dressed in Wellington boots and has a backpack slung over her shoulder, always ready to go. The storm of publicity surrounding her means she can hardly go anywhere in Japan without being recognized. So she's made London her base for now, but she's back in Tokyo at the moment to meet women who've been through similar experiences.
At some point, I wasn't able to chew and swallow, and I couldn't eat, and I couldn't get up one day, and I felt like, okay, I think I want to end my life. This is just, where can I go? I felt like I couldn't go out. I would put my family and friends in danger, and I felt like I maybe did what I had to do. But then I realized that if people see me, okay, because if you talk about sexual violence in public, that's what you get, this backlash, this threat, and look, she's dead. Then that was the worst example that I could have created. All I wanted to do was to let this society be able to open up to this topic. And if I can't be the one, then I'm a big failure.
Shiori Ito did something exceptional, something no woman before her dared to do in Japan. She talked about her rape in public, without anonymity. She revealed not only her own identity, but also the identity of her attacker, Noriyuki Yamaguchi, a renowned journalist and biographer of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. Ito and Yamaguchi had met at a sushi restaurant to discuss a possible internship. After her first glass of sake, Ito felt queasy and fainted in the restaurant. When she regained consciousness, she was in a hotel room, with a journalist on top of her, raping her. Talking about what happened that day is still very difficult for her.
The man who raped me, after we fought physically, and in the end, one of the things he said was, "You passed my exam."
You passed my exam?
Yeah, he said, "Gokaku da yo." And I was so shocked, you know, I didn't commit to this, and he just raped me, and he said that I'm passed.
From that moment, Ito's life changed. She knew that women who report rape embark on a long and torturous ordeal. Immediately after the incident, they must reenact the rape with dolls for an audience of police, who are in most cases male. After that, rape victims face a series of exhausting interviews. Even reporting the incident proved a challenge for Ito. In 2015, the Greater Tokyo area had only one rape hotline to serve 30 million people. Nevertheless, Ito went to the police, and the officers warned her of the consequences of what she was doing by reporting the rape.
That was the time I decided to go to police, but of course police told me the same thing that I was afraid of, saying that my life would be over, I won't be able to work in Japan. It was, you know, a problem because they didn't want to investigate. Well, police, they also didn't want to investigate such a high-profile person. So they always discouraged me. They didn't take my report. I tried to talk to them, I tried to encourage them, and they phoned CCTV. So that was the start. But after we doing that, this man who raped me was demoted. And then police was encouraged, okay, maybe he's no longer in power.
CCTV footage from the hotel showed clear images of Yamaguchi dragging Ito to his hotel room. The police also found the taxi driver that the journalist hired to transport Ito. He confirmed that she was passed out when she was taken to the hotel. That evidence made it possible for Ito to file a complaint with the police. And then she took her case to the press. Her story took off. Yamaguchi was supposed to be arrested, but at the last minute, the chief of police called off the order. Ito's case looked set to go the way of so many others in Japan, with a woman silenced. But then she was approached by her publisher.
Look, you just cracked open the door, and now people would listen to you. Now this is the time to use your words to really tell them what it is about. Because just doing press conference, answering for an interview, wouldn't be just your voice, and they'll pick the part they want to listen to. So it has to be now.
Ito called her book Black Box. Black Box. That was how the police referred to what happened in that hotel room, saying that no one could actually know whether Yamaguchi had really raped her. But thanks to the attention her book brought to this and other rape cases in Japan, the country would eventually change its 110-year-old laws on rape. And Ito is glad about that.
It was great.
In Ito's case, however, despite everything, the police decided that rape could not be proved. Because she was not fully conscious, it was considered a quasi-rape. She wasn't able to prove that something had been put in her drink. Yamaguchi claimed Ito simply had drunk too much, too quickly. He was never arrested, nor was he tried before a court.
We didn't have a chance to have a major change to be happen. You know, I know that other countries were like this before as well, but we didn't have a strong a major change to be able to flip this around. And I guess it's still, there's sort of this male-dominated society are still successful to be dominated one and to be not able to, for women to not to be able to talk about their rights. And if they do, yeah, what's going to happen?
But Shiori Ito isn't giving up. She has become a hero to Japanese women who, despite the international impact of the Me Too movement, haven't dared go public with their own traumatic experiences. Now she's gathering interviews for an international TV documentary about sexual abuse of women in Japan.
I realize that many, many women, oh, wistfully, many, many women want to talk about it. Like, there was really interesting Asahi newspaper survey saying that, what do you think about Me Too? And majority said, I feel like I want to say Me Too. I do feel empathy for it. But the other question was, then why can't you say Me Too? And the majority is saying, I'm so afraid of what's going to happen after I say Me Too.
Last December, a blogger called Hachu became the first Japanese woman to post under the Me Too hashtag on media platform BuzzFeed, unleashing a storm of reactions online. In her post, Hachu described cases of sexual harassment at the advertising company Dentsu, where she worked. Over the next 2 days, 70,000 supportive tweets brought the Me Too movement to Japan. But in the days and weeks that followed, Hachu received so many online threats and so much abuse that she began to distance herself from the movement. Men harassed her and demanded her silence, and women blamed her for what had happened, calling her behavior disrespectful. A few months later, Hachu isn't speaking publicly any longer, keeping quiet to avoid losing her job. Genki Katsube advises female professionals on family planning and prenatal care, topics he says don't get enough attention in Japan. The 35-year-old is also a social media activist, speaking out for gender rights across different platforms. We meet up in a rented office space, which he booked online for a small fee. It took no more than 3 minutes and a few clicks. The rental office is sparsely decorated with a simple table, a whiteboard, and a picture that shows two birds. One is in a cage, while the other one is free, saying to the caged one, I love you forever. Katsube wears his long hair up. He's got leopard print trainers with heels. He says that as a boy, he was told not to cry because it was seen as effeminate, just one way in which he was expected to live up to traditional ideas of masculinity. But Katsube says he just wanted to be himself. He belongs to the generation in Japan that is beginning to break free of the traditional ideas of gender.
I would like the Me Too movement here in Japan to be like it is abroad. There, someone began the Me Too movement and acknowledged it. And more other voices then said, yes, it happened to me too. Me too. Me too. Here in Japan, it's not the case that people don't want to say it as well, but that they can't.
Last year, Japan ranked 114th globally for gender equality, in last place among the G7 nations. All over the country, women are almost completely absent at the executive level. To make this point, Katsube sketches a pyramid in the air.
We have a masculine pyramid. In this kind of environment and system, when it comes to a working relationship with your boss, it's a lot easier to talk problems through with him over a glass of sake if you're a man.
A recent study in which girls and boys were asked about their dream job suggests that this male-dominated culture is deeply ingrained and not likely to change anytime soon. The boys wanted to be doctors, academics, or football stars. For girls, the most popular choice in the last 21 years has been baker. The study suggests that hardly any girl in Japan dreams of holding any kind of leadership position. if these antiquated gender roles were the only problem, it might be easier to fix with policy changes. But in Japan, the problem runs much deeper than that. Sexual assaults on women are common, and they're happening everywhere.
Oh yes, chikan, groping and grabbing, that's always been happening. For example, a friend of mine, in tears, once told her teacher that she'd been grabbed on the way to school. She was crying, and the teacher's reaction was, well, after all, you're a beautiful woman.
During peak hour on the Tokyo Metro, two train cars are reserved for women, so they can avoid being groped by men taking advantage of the cramped space. According to one study, 40% of Japanese women have been sexually harassed by a man. But Katsube thinks the real figure is much higher, with many women not realizing what qualifies as harassment. That's why he's working to raise awareness on his blog and at public events, giving examples of the many forms of sexual harassments that are so ubiquitous.
If a man in an open-plan office displays a pornographic image on his computer, few women in Japan would know that this is a form of sexual harassment. Or if someone won't stop saying, I love you, a couple of times is okay, but if they won't stop, that's not okay.
There's also the problem of how the Japanese express themselves that complicates things. The Japanese language doesn't have a clear word for no.
Porno だと no means yes. だけど but 本当は no means no. それを
In porn, no means yes, but in reality, no means no. Some people just don't understand that anymore. A slightly different story, but also related to pornographic films. In most cases, that is not sex between equals. Often, it's actually rape. And the woman keeps saying no. Ie, dame.
女性は、いや、ダメ。いや、ダメって言ったりとか。
Shiori Ito is also working to tackle this problem with a campaign called No Means No.
When I fought against this man, when he tried to rape me for the second time, I said no, I said stop. He never stopped. And I realized these words doesn't work. So I had to using curse word in English. And then he stopped. So I realized that we don't have that words to just say no. Just say, I mean, of course, if the words can stop, great, but these Japanese words are really complicated. Why no is yes, why stop, you know, is yes, and we don't have the word.
Fifty-year-old Kaori Sato, head of the Purple Union, is also campaigning hard. The union, which fights for women's rights in the workplace, operates out of three rooms tucked away in a tenement building between apartments and other offices. With only one permanent staff member, Sato works on her big task in a tiny neon-lit room crammed with stationery and cleaning supplies. Calm, thoughtful, and robust, she has something of a Japanese Angela Merkel about her. She even talks a bit like a politician.
Most women in Japan work part-time. They're not represented by any union. So I started a union that all women can join, regardless of where they work and whether they are freelancers or only earn a minimum wage.
15 years ago, Sato was raped at her workplace. She won a rare victory, seeing her rapist condemned in court. Only 10% of reported rapes in Japan result in conviction.
Sexual abuse of women in daily life is so widespread that for the most part, women will not even consider asking anyone for help. It's not a conscious choice. It doesn't occur to them that there's anywhere they could go.
Genki Katsube also continues to stress that sexual assaults often happen in the workplace and any other place that operates in a hierarchical structure.
Sexual harassment was done by a man, and in the company,
the man who perpetrates sexual harassment ranks higher up in the company, while a woman who becomes the victim of sexual harassment is lower in the company's hierarchy. So, if it comes to the point where one of the two has to leave, it will very likely not be the one who's more important to the company.
Fear of upsetting staff relations also prevents companies from responding to women's concerns. The atmosphere of coexistence, known as funinki in Japanese, is highly valued. The Japanese concept is something that is hard to put in words, but can be sensed by everyone in the workplace.
When management learns of an incident of sexual harassment at a company, they prefer that the case doesn't make waves. Both parties are supposed to keep quiet. The atmosphere in the company is very important in Japan. That starts in early childhood education. Nothing is ever right or wrong. Every situation must be judged by whether what the person does causes trouble for others. If so, then acting like this is considered wrong.
In this climate, Japan was unprepared for what happened in October 2017, when the Harvey Weinstein affair in Hollywood unleashed the Me Too movement in the U.S. and around the globe, says Kaori Sato.
It's a problem in the media. The Me Too campaign just flew over to Japan on social media channels before anyone had begun to discuss it in any way. Suddenly, the issue was there. But at the same time, the traditional media didn't respond.
I know, of course, it started with Harvey Weinstein case, but it wasn't about him, it wasn't about her. It was about me too. It was about how many these things happening, how many times do we have to let this happen? But that's not the take in Japan. It's more about who is she, who is he, who's lying.
For Shiori Ito, the author of Black Box, the most important thing now is that the truth comes to light. A woman should not be forced to work in a job that demands her silence and costs her integrity and honor. She didn't choose it, but now she sees little option but to take on the role of activist and agitator in a country where the voices saying Me Too are too easily silenced.
And this report by Michaela Fieser about the challenges to change the culture of silence over sexual harassment in Japan wraps up this edition of World in Progress. The presenter was Kathleen Schuster. You can listen back to this or past editions. Just go to dw.com/worldinprogress or download our podcast from iTunes or SoundCloud. For more globalization stories, check out DW Global Society on Facebook. World in Progress will be back next week. For today, on behalf of the studio team here in Bonn, Germany, I'm Anke Rasper saying thanks for tuning in and take care. Okay.